I have to put on my hair.
I hope that as the day progresses, if you didn't have a chance to take a look at the room, I've really come to love Keith. I had the, I'll tell you how Keith and I, when I first became aware of Keith, it was 3 or 4 years ago. Keith may know more accurately.
Yeah, that's about right.
Time all seems to have run together. But I was asked to share my testimony at the I-10 luncheon. And so I did. And Keith was there.
Fresh out of jail about three months early.
Yeah. Don't let the cat out of the bag. Doug Moncure, the guy, my owner, the guy that owns the company I work for, and a very godly man, brought Keith to the luncheon. So that was the first time I ever became aware of Keith. And then sometime after that, Doug hired Keith. So then, how long after that did you go to work at M&M?
Probably about 9-10 months later.
Okay. Yeah. So I was totally oblivious to Keith. And then all of a sudden, one day, he's at the office. So he's got an accounting background. So Doug had hired him to do some... Well, he's a multi-talented guy. So he was just kind of a girl Friday, if you will, at the office. A boy Friday. And he would do just all kinds of odds. But anyway, I don't spend a lot of time at the office. Maybe once or twice a month I go in because I don't make any money in the office. I need to be out in the field. It's like spending too much time at church. I'd like to be out in the lost people. So, but anytime that whenever I go in, we just have these most awesome conversations with Keith, spiritual conversations. So I knew that God had called him and given him the heart to answer the call, and he was in this growth process. So then, in December, I always take off pretty much the whole month of December. I don't even go to the office. And so my first time back in the office after that month, I'll come in January. So January of 2016, I went to the office, and Keith wasn't there. And I was like, where's Keith? And I was told that he quit. And I was like, oh, man. So I didn't even have his phone number. So I got his phone number from somebody, and I called him. I said, Keith, man, what are you doing? What's up? So anyway, he had some reasons for moving on. It was time for him to move on. So I invited him to lunch, and I had really kind of wrestled over the time he was there. Should I decide for him? Should I, So once he was like, man, I invited him to study the Bible with me, and he agreed. So that was probably February 2016 that we started. So here we are, May of 2017. So we're at the 15-month mark. You guys know Book 2, Chapter 6 is your testimony. So for about a month and a half, we've kind of, maybe even 2 months, we've kind of been in neutral because Keith has been wrestling with God, which is what is required, man, when it comes to writing that testimony.
Think about March 3rd, right around early March, kind of wrestling a little bit.
So it's a painful process to get in there and dig through all that crap, but man, is it a healthy, therapeutic process. So Keith's going to share his testimony. It's his first public profession of this of his testimony. So without further ado, as they like to say.
Come on down. Thank you. Appreciate y'all's time this morning. Actually, a lot of the stuff in here, like Rick was saying, you know, is a little bit painful, I'm sure. It's like when everybody does it. There you go, John. that bothers you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
We don't want to hear your heartbeat.
I was kind of making a little reference to some jokes about AA, but one of the parts... I was working through Doug, actually, on that program. When I'm just going through your self-inventory and your sexual inventory, things, people you wronged and stuff. So this is good for me because we never got through that step before Doug moved away. So this will help me as well, too. So here we go. I'm just going to get into it. This is a work in process. It's probably one of my shorter versions. You know, Rick and I, you know, Rick, you had a good, probably, 30 minutes last night. But Rick has told me that, I need to come up. Cater them to your different audiences, so I'm going to have different versions. You don't need to put them in Microsoft Word and things like that. So he's giving me some good tips. So you know, any feedback afterwards would be appreciated as well. So, all right, here we go. Like I said, my name's Keith Shoup. And here's my story. Imagine yourself in a burning house after being on a five-day binger of cocaine and alcohol, maybe about 2-4 hours of sleep, with no way out. This was my physical living hell on October 1st, 2009. Not exactly sure how that happened, you know, how it came that way. It's a very painful thing to come to, but that was you know, kind of the bottom, and I'm going to kind of get to and show you what got me there. You know, I grew up in Angleton, as y'all probably heard last night. You know, all know it's a big metropolis down there. Had two parents in the household, no brothers or sisters, so kind of like a spoiled only child for the most part down there. Was very active in sports at a young age, all the t-ball, softball, things of that nature. Always had people at the house, friends, you know, everything. Like you always hear, apparently look good on the surface. Both my parents, you know, growing up, you know, as far as church goes, they're the type that if you didn't go to church, you got to stay in the house the rest of the day, and you didn't eat meals, and you were punished to that. You know, so that was their background as far as church. So I guess they decided at a young age on Sundays we'd mow the yard, you know, go out to eat, you know, do other things. So church, you know, left up to a 5-year-old, 7-year-old, or throughout was left up to me. So I think we all know the choices most people would make. There are some people that are stronger than I am that obviously might have found a way into a relationship with God, but I pretty much had a non-existent relationship at that point. You know, as far as education goes, I always was very good at school. For whatever reason, it just didn't require a lot of studying. I was a good student overall, but I was that kid that always get the needs improvement, or even sometimes I got unsatisfactory in conduct. I couldn't figure out how you could get A pluses but get unsatisfactory. My mom, being a school teacher, kind of frowned upon that. So that's when, you know, I referred to my mom. This was the, which I later inherited, the Jekyll and Hyde mode. So mom could be the sweetest lady in the world, and then you get a bad grade or something that embarrassed her status in the community, ass whippings came out at that point. You know, at the time it wasn't funny. I can laugh upon it now, but you know, that was, you know, one of the first things. One of my best friends described my mother as, I never seen somebody from the nicest lady go mean so fast. So he got on his bike, rode home one day, told his mom how my mom was crazy, or his mother how my mom was crazy. So, you know, it's one of those things, you know, it was very unhealthy, you know, growing up, seeing something like that. You know, a lot of beatings and a lot of, you know, I wish you were dead, never born, stuff like that. So a lot of mental and physical abuse at a young age. And then as far as my dad, that was another interesting scenario, because he was one of those people, he was not the leader of the household, like a man should be a lot of times. My mom was running the household. So if conflict happened, my mom decided to break every plate in the house, instead of saying something or maybe preventing, Dad would just, I'd be in the living room freaked out, and Dad just go to his room and just shut the door. So he was that, you know, type of figure who just didn't want to deal with conflict, which, you know, a lot of people don't. You know, in a relationship, there's usually a leader and usually a follower. So that's kind of what I dealt with on this, you know, quote-unquote healthy family from the outside. I did have a few experiences with church. As I mentioned, I didn't go, but I know, similar to Rick and I heard his story, you know, I like to play sports. So, you know, I went to the Second Baptist Church in Angleton, man, go play basketball. But you had to kind of go to church. So after a while, maybe I saw some small hypocrisy at age 11, 12 and stuff. And the people that just went to church to be showing up and then, you know, judging me or judging others. So I really got a sour taste of, you know, church at a young age. And even at one point, I think I was about 13, 14 years old, and in my adolescence, I had a friend, remember his name, Cheney Phillips, and he took me up to the First Baptist Church, a lot of Baptist church in there. And he had this saying, he goes, man, you need to go up the front, you need to be saved. I had no idea what that was, what that involved, anything like that. So out of ignorance, I just went up there out of peer pressure, and, you know, supposedly I was saved, but, you know, I know I wasn't, you know, at this point. So that was it. Teenage years came along, and then, you know, I was always rambunctious, sarcastic. I have these little cycles of Jekyll and Hyde. My dad was, you know, the runaway, and I was more the Eddie Haskell. You know, I was able to do really good in school, manipulate the situation, and then behind the back just be a total jerk a lot of times and things. So I'd gotten a lot of, you know, a lot of little fights in school. Just, you know, very mischievous, but somehow doing well in school and grades and stuff always made it okay to an extent. One of the things I had at a young age, I was very passionate about the stock market, finance, things of that nature. I brought a stockbroker, I think when I was kind of backtracked a little bit, I try not to do this, but to class when I was 8 years old. I was, you know, very intrigued by that. So in high school, I kind of knew a career path, took a couple years of accounting. So that was not a problem. But like I said, at this point, I'm very arrogant, sarcastic, you know, just a spoiled teenager. Finally decided, you know, I'd go take my talents to Southwest Texas State. Heard that was a fun place to do some partying and hanging out and stuff. You know, Playboy says it's a top 10 party school. Why would you not want to go there at the time? So, you know, same thing. School was pretty easy. You know, I went from doing a lot of drinking in high school, and then my freshman year started LSD, ecstasy, cocaine, started hitting a lot of hard drugs. I didn't ever mess with weed because that was just a low-end drug. You just skip that and go to the good stuff. So it was not a gateway drug for me. You know, so at that point, after I added all the different drugs to my arsenal, you know, more sexually active, really didn't have girlfriends in school because, you know, what was the point of getting close to somebody, not being able to trust people, I felt. So after 4 years, I graduated, and actually at the back end of college, met the first girlfriend I really actually enjoyed and liked. We moved to Houston together. And probably everything that I could have done wrong in a relationship, well, you said this, you did this, you know, after I call it the 3 months, everybody's nice the first 3 months, the niceties. And I remember even one of my friends, Benji, saying, you know, wait till the real key shoot shows up in 3 months. And sure enough, I did. And, you know, and my Jekyll and Hyde that I, you know, decided would be good to use came out. And then my shutdown skills I learned from my father, you know, I threw both of those in there. So I was just a great person in relationships, let me tell you. So after graduating 4 years, you know, I had accounting in high school, and it was, you know, what I want to do. Everything was going fine professionally, you know, personally always kind of struggled. Went and worked at AIM Investments or Invesco over there at Greenway Plaza. Worked there for like 6 or 7 years. My Eddie Haskell skills served me well there. You know, after about 2.5 years, struggled in a relationship still. Got in a relationship with a girl I worked with for about a year, and that doesn't work out too well in your cubicle after you break up and they're like one away from you. So after a while, in my 20s, I decided, you know, why just date a traditional relationship? I'm just suck at this, quite honestly. So the drug usage was on the weekends. Maybe sometimes a Thursday night was always the party night. I'm still 24, 25, 26, so decided to, you know, still do recreational drugs, you know, quite a bit. But it didn't seem like anything was out of control. One thing I started doing was like, man, maybe not date. Maybe I should just go to this place called a strip club. You know, there's a big repertoire of women and stuff. And, you know, you give them money, they'll be nice to you. So that was one thing I started doing to add to all the other sins and all the horrible things I already had attached to me. 9/11 happened. After 9/11 happened, I was kind of not only just started questioning life, you know, seeing everything that had happened. So at that point, I said, you know what? I'm just going to quit work. So I just quit, took a year off, did some options trading, did really well. But after 6 months, got bored, party scene got a little too much. So I said, you know what, I need to get back to work. So at this point, started at Bank One and Chase. Probably one of the worst things that ever happened to me, because at this point, I found I was really good about manipulation, good at sales, found out maybe money will make me happy. So I built a book of business over $100 million in less than 2 years. And see, you know, nice windfall of money at this point with that residuals that you can get. So down the road here, partying, more strip clubs, more intense drug use. Gets to the point where I start missing work once or twice a week, but my finances aren't really hurting. So I don't think I have a problem. I'm not La Quinta smoking crack and stuff, living day by day. So, you know, who's going to tell me I have a problem? All the people around me I'm giving money to, we're going out and having fun. So it's another form of manipulation. As well. So 2008, market dropped. Most people were making less money, panicking. I ended up picking up new clients because some financial advisors dropped out. So like I said, the money train kept on going. And then finally some things happened. I was in a relationship, I think probably was a stripper. In fact, I know it was. And that became commonplace to bring them home after a lot of times. So got a misdemeanor assault and one of my relationships. That was a part of the end where things really started going downhill really quick. Ended up taking a trial. I had a hung jury for 2 days. A municipal court judge is not too happy when you take his time after about noon and you're 3 days on a trial. So first offense, he gave me a six-month sentence on that. And I'm thinking I am in jail. They arrest me. You know, that work, everybody kind of knows about it. I got this big book of business I'm handling. So get out, and I find out this thing called appeal bond. Oh, you can stay out for 2 years. I'll probably get dropped on some technicalities. So I'm like, well, shoot, man, I'm going to keep this party rocking because I might not, you know, be able to, you know, I might be in jail for 6 months. Things change. Well, right after that, one of my best friends that I mentioned earlier, Benji, committed suicide. And he had been a childhood friend. He was my college roommate. Grew up with him in Angleton since I was 5 years old. So that was one of the things. And just, you know, I'd always done well professionally, and all of a sudden my professional life's in there. You know, there's just a whole range of things going, thinking I'm going to jail. So basically, as I refer to it commonly as a great fire of 09, I'd literally, after that 5 days at the beginning of my story, being on drugs and alcohol out of my mind, the house I was staying in, I lit it on fire with myself in there, leaving no escape. Eventually was able to kick out. Now I know about windows and stuff being in the business. There's a thing called double, triple panel windows. Pretty hard to kick those out and get out. So I was able to do that. Fell down through a second story, shattered my elbow. I had second, third degree burns on my body from some of the residual on there. Yeah, it's pretty much rock bottom for me at this point. I mean, there's no other way to say it. You know, at that time, you know, just a broken person. You know, I just think in the world about my career, because all I cared about was money and not about myself and everything like that. So just an absolute mess. Probably on another unrelated charge, most likely. I can't even remember, but this point, December 2010, filing. I'm in Harris County Jail, which is probably, Rick mentioned Club Fed, but there is nothing's Club Fed about Harris County Jail. If anybody's ever got DWI, I've been there, they know. So I'm on the seventh floor, which is the worst of the worst. There's one through seven. So I'm on the seventh floor, and man, it's just the first couple of days is brutal in there. And a guy comes up, his name's Carl Ward. And man, I'd sit down, and he was so easy to talk to. It was just the weirdest thing. And he was up in the mornings, the guy that was mopping the floors at 4 or 5, cleaning, you know, where everybody else doesn't want to do anything. They're angry at the world. And he comes and talks to me, and I just tell him how, man, I feel like I've disappointed my family, particularly my father at this time. And he pulls out his Bible, and, you know, he turns to Luke 15:11, prodigal son, you know, and he starts reading off the story. Man, tears just come to my eyes, and I'm just realizing, man, there's actually a story in here. What I told him, how I felt, the disappointment and stuff, and it's like, is it that easy, you know, and stuff. And that was pretty much my first taste of my transition, where I knew there was something more I needed to, you know, when I hit rock bottom, this lasted for another 9 months of partying. So really at that time, I really probably had until I got in jail here, but it was the beginning, new beginning for me. You know, then I had to go serve the assault charges. I know it's hard to keep up with, but about 5 months later, April 2011, I'm in jail. I go, man, they have church in jail. So they call you out. So, I go in there, and the guy's talking about 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter. And he's going through there. And remember earlier, I was always talking about relationships. Well, you did this to me, you did that, arguing and things. So, my upbringing, I never knew what true love was. It was more codependency. It was a kind of a sick relationship where, you know, you kind of, you know, you're close to the abusers and stuff like that. So, you know, I really, you know, kind of felt what love was or what it looked like. And you don't have to have even a mother, father, anything like that, because we have our one father, and that's the thing that was explained to me. So that was really, really amazing to me. And he also was talking about this thing that I thought, but talking about salvation. He said, man, this is what you do to be saved. And it was quite simple. But at the time, I still wasn't ready, because I had to think about this. I was accounting background. I was like, this is too good to be true. So about 6 hours later, I start going through things, and finally, in the cell in Harris County, got down on my knees, and seven other people in a bunk. I think at the time I was on the floor bunk because it was overcrowded. And I asked for salvation through the Lord. And that was, you know, a continuance of what my friend Carl had started that I ended up meeting in there. So, fast forward another 4 or 5 months, I still have to deal with arson charges. So I'm looking at getting deferred adjudication. I gave my attorney $40,000. Oh, we're good. I know the judge. Next thing you know, judge is handing me out 8 years. And at first, you know, you're in quite a bit of shock. You know, when you get 8 years, you think you're going home and everything. But in hindsight, it was the best thing that could have happened because still I needed to find more of a relationship with God. I didn't know who Keith was. So when you get in jail, you're like Rick said, you're stripped of everything. You know, you literally, you got a box of ramen noodle soups. You know, you've had everything taken from your pride. I thought my licenses, I know I heard doctors and attorneys, how much those things meant to them. That meant a lot to me, my license I had for 17 years. So I felt my identity was gone at that point, you know, of who I was and what I want to do with that stockbroker as a kid when I'm 8 years old. So this juncture, you know, I get in jail and instead of being angry and mad about it, I just continued my quest. I got to, you know, TJ's from Beaumont. I got to live in Beaumont for a little bit at Larry Gist Correctional Facility over there. But at Larry Gist, continued, met some guys. One of the guys' name was Magic. There was two black guys, a white guy, big country, myself, and I'm going Brandon, the other gentleman. But we started in Bible study. Now, I couldn't eat with black people, they said, in there because you're going to get a beat down if that happens. But you can have church with somebody of the other race. So that's okay. It's not frowned upon to have church. But there's 62 people in there out of 4. We started, and those guys have already been in the book every day. So breakfast, lunch, dinner, we studied. We start off in Acts. It was Acts 2 or 3, chapter 3. And that was my starting point for the Bible. And you know, we went that direction all the way through Revelations, I think, got through there, started a little bit of the Old Testament. But, you know, that's what I one thing I found, you know, I was not ashamed of God anymore. We'd get up in the middle of the night in front of everybody, the four of us, and we would pray, you know, right amongst everybody where, you know, they're just thinking of getting out, what they can do and not trying to make any change in their life. And I also refer to it the stop sign part of my life. I think I was talking to Miles last night a little about it. God gave me 10,000 different stop signs and gave me the opportunity to change my life and find Him. But with my story and where things happened, it just took me to fall that hard and hurt people in my life and most importantly hurt myself for me, you know, to get to that. So after this, I was in jail. I was very fortunate. I got a thing called shock probation where they shock you in the system and you're sure as hell shocked. And so you get out and then the judge says, well, you need 4 more months. So I'm in there for another 4 months, and I got a lot of quiet time, and that was when I said, you know what, I just realized the other day, I said, I actually had some memory verses before I started this program, and one of them I decided I read over about a 6-hour period, you know, was, you know, Psalm, you know, 23, you know, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, He makes me lie down in green pastures, He leads me beside still water. So that was one I learned. I was real good at acronyms, so the other one that I already had in the program, you know, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding and always acknowledge Him and He shall direct your path. Mine's more the King James versus the NIV on the last part. So, and even at this point, I would say in hindsight, I'm looking, I was almost mentoring. There were some young little 18, 19, 20-year-olds and they were asking me, they thought I was kind of a jailhouse attorney at first, but then they would come in and, you know, ask about the Bible. But the small amount I knew, I was able to share with them a little bit. I started prayer group and Fort Bend County Jail when I was down there and stuff. So, you know, it was good for me. You can't really, unless you have a break from life like that, it takes you down. I really didn't see the errors in my way. And it was one of the best things happened. Thank God I'm not in there for 4 or 5 years. That's not, you know, I think that was a good thing that happened to me. And, you know, and it's hard to say that, believe me. So, once I get out of jail, like I mentioned, oh, right before I'd gone in, I'd seen Doug. Literally, we run into him at AA class the day before I think I'm getting shock probation. So I don't even really mention Doug at the time and say, hey, we'll get your number. So Doug had found out. In fact, he tried to send me a letter in jail, but I mailed it back and he had moved. Well, long story short, I get out. I contact Doug first thing. And he says, man, you need to go see this cat named Rick Shelton. You know, and he didn't even mention he worked for him or anything like that. And like I said, this is 3-4 months I'm out of jail and stuff, and I'm still broken because I'm trying to find my identity with work. What am I going to do? Who is Keith Shoup really still? You know, I'm still working on that as a process. It's an ongoing process. So I go see Rick, and, you know, all the stuff that happened to Rick was the same age, you know, middle age. Mine was 38, 39 years old, the same same as Rick in that regards. And I hear Rick talking about how he had married, he had kids, this was that. I'm like, man, this can't be real. How is it this easy? Because it's, you know, I'm struggling the first 3 or 4 months out. So, you know, so finally, as Rick had mentioned, you know, he's in the office one day. I was meeting with Doug for a while, but he had to transition out of town. So I was kind of, you know, alone for a little bit. I was falling out of my morning prayer, things I was doing really well when I got out, I was doing. So you heard the story of Rick. He came to the office, and Rick's pretty funny because he's a very technical, inquisitive person, as we know. So he comes sit like this. I'd be at my desk. So what's going on, Keith? You know, and he just started asking some questions, and I really had no idea. As I was talking to Sam earlier, and a few guys, at first, you know, Rick's kind of this guy kind of testing you for if he's going to get you to come and sell Amway or something, you know. So I didn't know what Rick wanted, you know. I didn't know his angle or anything. He was an overly nice guy, I guess. So it's yes, after about a year in the office, as he mentioned, he never got a chance to really, you know, talk to me about maybe the program. So he called, and, you know, that's one thing of how my life looks at now is, you know, I started meeting with Rick. You know, Rick, if as y'all can see, Rick's going to hold you to a nice level of accountability. Rick's not going to be one of those guys. He's not going to scream. He's not a yeller. But, man, like this testimony, getting together, other things, Rick will let you know if he'll give you a story for about 30 minutes on how somebody did something wrong the first time. But then the second time, it's going to be directed at you with both barrels. So you got to take a grain of salt. Chris can attest to that for me. But, man, Rick has he just, like he said last night, God's not going to love me anymore by doing this program than he already does. It's for me to get the opportunity to become closer to that, to be able to meet guys like you, you know, share our stories, and, you know, ultimately for me to help other people. So now, I'm a retired talent scout from the strip clubs. I don't attend those anymore. Very seldom drink. Don't do cocaine any longer. You know, I'm trying. I have my own little business. I started in home improvements, which I learned from working there at Doug's. You know, there I'm still not where I want to be. There's a lot of life changes, but I can tell you right now, and I would have had a stage 5 meltdown again if it wasn't for Christ, if it wasn't for Rick, Chris, other people, you guys in my life in the program. You know, because life is going to deal you with stressful things all the time and life changing events, and it's, you know, how we handle them, and it's our relationship with God that I found out. And go back to Carl, that guy Carl, that same guy in 2010, still writes me letters. Rick's read them. I mean, this guy is in jail doing what people should be doing, like Dick Ellis, and or not Dick, but gosh, your earthly father,
Jay Baker,
like that. And he's surrounded by people. He's down in Beeville, Texas. Anybody knows about prison camps down there? It's no joke. And everybody calls him. He's a black guy. They call him Uncle Tom, and he goes through a lot of ridicule for standing up for God. But you know, I get these inspirational letters from him. I've had bad days. He's in there for 25, 30 years, or been there that long. So for him to have that heart, why can't I have that faith when God's given me a second chance to be here to eat bacon and eggs and not be told, you know, get powdered eggs and when to go eat for 2 minutes and just be alive. I shouldn't be alive. That was one thing on a side note there. As I'm in that house fire, I contacted my dad by text, and he was going over there, and he told me later on, he goes, man, I was praying that I would do anything for you to be alive, and it's pretty amazing that he had the faith because I didn't at the time. So, you know, so that's one thing. I know my parents, that's another thing. I've forgiven both my parents. You know, there's nothing, you know, I have my choice when I become a man. Yeah, we can mimic things at a young age, but you got to let it go. I've forgiven my mother. We even make jokes. We call it, man, you don't want 1980s Carolyn to come back. You know, we tell somebody pisses her off and stuff. She is really a nice lady. Chris knows her. But, and my dad, he tries. He's still kind of caught his ways. You know, when you see your father saying, I love you, don't see those type of things. Those are hard. But, you know, one thing, you get off the phone every time, he'll always say, I love you and stuff. So there's been changes in my life, and they're going to continue. So that's my testimony for now. So thank y'all. Appreciate it.